Hey, thanks so much for joining us on this week's episode of Reframe Stuff You Should Know About. At the 1 minute and 30 second mark, we discuss a very interesting video that MKBHD put out on YouTube asking the question whether you can trust tech reviewers or not. We then jump over to chatting about Samsung's Galaxy Buds Live and Samsung's Unpacked event scheduled for August the 5th. That's at the 22 minute mark that we begin that discussion. And then we move over to chatting about Elon Musk's claim that Tesla will have autonomous level 5 driving by the end of the year. That's at the 43 minute mark. And we wrap up the whole thing with asking the question, what happened to Quibi? It had such promise and then didn't seem to quite deliver. That's at the 52 minute mark. This week in Reframe Stuff You Should Know About, our weekly tech wrap-up, we're joined by Nadeem Naika from Men's Health.
Hi, everyone. Very excited to be here, Brendan. Thank you so much for having me.
I mean, thank you so much for coming back. I think the last time you were here, we had quite a good conversation, actually.
I really enjoyed it. I'm just glad I got called back. It means I did something good.
I mean, you know, maybe it is just your second chance. We haven't quite decided who wins. I don't know, the prize, the role, the job?
We'll figure it out. I think Hadley definitely wins it. But, you know, I like a bit of nepotism.
You say this as if we're related. People have confused Hadley and I. We've stood next to each other and people have been like, oh, Hadley. And I'm like, no, that's the guy next to me. Sorry. But thank you. But no.
That just means Hadley's getting way too much airtime and you should have me more.
Yeah, I think we'll have to see about that.
Yeah, no. Hadley's a very hard act to follow. So very excited to get things going today.
Yeah, it's actually been, I mean, it's always an interesting week in tech, but I think this week more than any of the others, it's been, you know, a little bit more lively in different ways, shall we say. I think let's actually just jump straight into it. And before we sort of touch on any of the sort of big tech brands and tech stories from the week, there's one that came out towards the end of this week, a YouTube video. And I think it's kind of important that we start here. So MKBHD, everyone should know who MKBHD is. He is the largest tech YouTuber in the world with over 11 million subscribers. And he dropped a very interesting video. He says the video actually came about as a result of a tweet from SuperSaf. Now, SuperSaf, for those who don't know, Safwan Ahmed, he is another tech YouTuber from the UK, and he essentially pushed out a tweet saying, you know, that essentially as tech reviewers, especially as tech YouTubers, you know, they get a lot of flack from the public, you know, so if they say, oh, they love something about a product or they love a product, then people are like, oh, you know, how much were you paid to say this? If they say that there's something that they don't like, oh, you know, well, you must just be a hater or you must be paid by another brand. And if they say nothing, then they get questioned, well, what's wrong with you? Why aren't you saying anything about this product? So it almost feels like you can't win. And what MKBHD, Marques Brownlee, for those who don't know his name, he pushed out a video that said, can you trust MKBHD? And he essentially, you know, asks the question or answers the question that people have been asking about how much can we trust from, you know, these tech reviewers, whether it's on YouTube, whether it's, you know, in a podcast like I do or a website, you know, or in print or hybrid or both, which, you know, you obviously do already or whatever the case might be. How much can you trust about what people are saying? And he said some very interesting things. One is that at the end of the day, you know, we're all human. So we all have our unconscious biases towards certain products because they work best for us. You know, and I've always said to people, I might be particular to a certain brand, but that doesn't mean that that's the brand that's right for you. You know, that product is the right product for you. And that's always something I sort of try to keep in mind. But at the end of the day, there's certain things that we're going to look for in smartphones or laptops or tablets that are going to be slightly more geared to what we need or what our preferences are. You know, whether it's color reproduction on an image or, you know, how saturated or not saturated an image is, you know, how certain controls work. All of those little things will come through. And as he says, you know, you shouldn't actually just be getting your opinion from one person. You should get it from multiple sources. Because if you're spending money on a product, you know, make sure you do all of your research. And I loved the fact that he had this conversation because I think you know, Nadim, with the type of work that we do, we work with a lot of brands, we work with a lot of PR and a lot of sort of different types of media. And, you know, sometimes people think, oh, well, you just work with this brand because, oh, they paid. Or you work with this brand because of whatever other reason. And I think it's an important discussion just to have, even if it's just a quick, you know, few minutes discussion.
Completely.
In terms of how we do things, or, you know, what sort of matters to us, or just, you know, if you're from the general public, this is sort of the perspective of a journalist or a reviewer, and what we think about that entire topic. I'm assuming you've seen the video. So, you know, what are your thoughts on this entire topic?
I think, you know, I'm so glad he addressed it, because I feel like it was such an obvious thing to talk about for the longest time. Because I think even when you and I speak to each other, you know what sort of products I like and the brands I like and the brands I lean towards. And I know the ones you like and which is your favorite as a human, as an individual. And the fact that he comes out and says, listen, you know, if we don't talk about it, that's a problem. If we talk about it, it's a problem. And if we don't like a brand, it's a problem. You know, how can we find that balance? I feel like, especially YouTubers for a long time, were in a very interesting space when it came to tech. They were almost, and I mean this with the biggest amount of respect, they were almost the influencers of tech, like you see now on Instagram with brands. And so they didn't have a big name behind them, like, you know, CNET, The Verge, et cetera, et cetera. And so, you know, how do you sort of trust them going forward? And how do you know who to trust? I honestly personally think that a YouTuber that's experienced in tech should just be just as legitimate, if not even more legitimate than people working for big brands. I mean, there's no real difference there. You're looking for someone that has a good following, has expertise. And I just really enjoyed the insight that he brought to the table. I think as a journalist and as a reviewer myself, if you respect the profession, if you respect the tech, and if you respect the work that you're doing, you're never going to be biased on purpose. And, you know, as you say, it is on the hand of the consumer then to watch multiple videos, you know, on YouTube per se, and read multiple articles, and you're going to get the right feel, and the right feel of the product will come across.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've mentioned a couple of things which are important. Obviously, you know, like MKBHD has said, and you're obviously reiterating, check out multiple reviews, whether it's watching videos, whether it's reading from different sources, that's important. And, you know, obviously, as you say, I think also, I wouldn't say maybe that tech YouTubers are the sort of original influencers, but, you know, they definitely were at the forefront of it. Or should we say YouTubers were at the forefront of it?
Yes.
You know, really. You know, I know for me, example, I have certain brands that I prefer. You know, this is not an unknown fact, especially when it comes to smartphones. There's a certain brand that I prefer for me because their products have worked better for me. I happen to think that for a large degree of their stuff, not everything, you know, they've got, you know, a fairly superior product. But again, that's for me. I realize that that's not for everybody else. And, you know, people have sometimes said, oh, you know, but you don't talk about this brand, you don't like this brand. You know, it's not the case. It's the case that, again, as MKBHD said in his video, you know, he said he's not going to tell the truth just to protect the brand's feelings, essentially. Like, if he thinks that something is bad about a product, he's going to say it, even though it might mean that he's not going to end up, you know, working with a brand. Now, I've experienced that myself a couple of times from some of the sort of more well-known brands in the country, where I've just tried to be honest and open and say, this is what I think. You know, again, I always try to put the disclaimer of, these are my opinions and my thoughts, you know, and this is what works for me. But certain brands have gotten to the point where, you know, it's a game where you've got to beg and plead, and it's purely because they don't like things that you've said. And I'm like, yeah, but, you know, that's not the game that we should be playing. At the end of the day, I'm just giving my opinion based on my experiences, you know, with these things. And I think it's a sad state of affairs when, not just in South Africa, but around the world, this is the sort of situation we sit in, where brands are behaving like that, you know, and we've got to be so careful with what we say or don't say. And it's even more so, you know, when you have a big brand name like men's health behind you, you know, because then you've obviously got to consider, you know, spend relations and that sort of thing. Whereas with someone like me who's independent, it's a more interesting game because obviously, you know, you need to be able to make sure you have the engagement, the followers, you know, the reach and all of that. And if you don't have certain products, then it could be a case of, listen, you lose watchers or listeners or people visiting your site just because of that. So I think it's an interesting topic. I think it's important. You know, I can say from my side, I have never done any paid for or sponsored reviews. But like I've said on Twitter, if and when that day comes, you know, I won't even label them as reviews. It'll be, you know, hands-on or a first look or, you know, a discussion about, and it'll be labeled, you know, as either sponsored or ad or whatever the case might be. And I say this, you know, because I've obviously got some interesting content coming up in the next couple of weeks with some brands that I'm actually working with. But again, they're not reviews, you know, they'll either be unboxings or hands-on or that sort of thing. But I think that that goes for all the tech reviewers. At the end of the day, you know, we go to all of these events, we get all of these products from these brands. We all have our preferences. We all have certain products or brands that we prefer, and we do the best that we can, I believe, to be as unbiased as possible when we're giving you feedback. You know, but at the end of the day, like you've said, people need to make sure that they're getting other viewpoints and other opinions. And maybe someone's, you know, reviewing or reporting on something that's not sort of their first love or their strength. You know, so maybe find someone who is strong in that area. Again, diversity in opinions is very, very important, especially in this game.
Completely. And I just liked what you touched on when you talked about if something is sponsored, you do get a sponsored review. I think as all content creators, no matter what you're talking about, whether it's tech, gear, you know, whatever, it's your right. And it's by law, you're meant to mark things as sponsored. And I think if you have any integrity as a content creator, journalist, and reviewer, you really need to let your audience know when something is paid for. And I think I can't say that enough where, you know, I am with Men's Health and, you know, I work with a lot of tech, but if something's sponsored, it's very clearly stated on our site. And I think as a content creator, you need to lose that fear of, okay, if I say something like this about a brand, something bad about a brand, they might not work with me. I mean, if they don't work with you, that's their loss and their strategy is wrong, because at the end of the day, it's their brands who need to up their game. And how can you even improve a product? Because a lot of the time, Brendan, I think when you found something wrong with a device or something you're reviewing, I mean, I resonate with that. So even if you lean towards the brand or I lean towards the brand, it's still going to come out in the public. People are going to still pick up these problems. And so that's why I think it's so important just to make sure the difference between sponsored and editorial is very, very clear.
Yeah. You know, we need to be very clear about what is sponsored, what isn't sponsored. And unfortunately, with a lot of influencers, and I actually hate saying this, or maybe not a lot, but a certain number of influencers, a certain percentage, you know, they'll do work with the brand and they won't, you know, push it out as advertised or sponsored or even gifted. Like one person who is fantastic at that and is always very transparent about that sort of thing is Hayley Chamberlain, Hales World on YouTube. You know, she always, even in a social media post, will be like, you know, this was gifted or this was sponsored or that sort of thing. And she always mentions it in her videos as well. And I really appreciate that about her. But I think we're sitting in a very unique position right now, you know, not just doing what we do and having the relationships that we have with these brands, because let's be honest, those relationships are important as well. Mm. You know, that's also what helps us bring, you know, our listeners, our readers, you know, our watchers on any sort of platforms. You know, those relationships are what help us bring you that content. You know, that's how we can sometimes bring you things that no one else is able to bring you because of the relationships that we have. So it's a fine line balancing that relationship and maintaining that, and obviously not abusing it, and also not feeling like you're obliged to just say nice things about a product just because you happen to have a good working relationship with a specific brand or, you know, people in marketing or PR. You know, we do our best. I know that for for a fact with you. I know that about myself with a lot of people that I've been fortunate enough to work with.
Thank you so
much. But at the end of the day, you know, we are going to be human. There are going to be certain things that we're going to gravitate towards. And sometimes you won't see us writing about a brand or talking about a brand. One, because we just don't have the product, or we, you know, haven't been able to build a proper relationship with a brand where we can get product from them to review. And, you know, we're in South Africa where things cost a fortune, so we can't afford to buy all of these things all the time. And sometimes, you know, and this is a situation I've been in, I am actually just not saying something about a brand because every time I say something, you know, that brand gets a little bit more upset with me. And I've eventually gotten to the point where I've been removed from lists because they don't want me to tell the truth.
Can we chat about that for a minute? Like, how should brands then start approaching us as journalists? I personally feel they don't have a right to be offended. I feel if you give me a device, you need to know that as a journalist, I'm going to tell you my opinion, and it's all about public interest.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. But there's two brands. One, I think you know, you, Nadim, would know who I'm talking about. and well, there's one brand where, listen, yeah, I still believe that they make a really great product. They really do. I'm not denying that. But I feel like it's a brand who's overhyped and overmarketed certain aspects. And, you know, the products don't necessarily live up to those specific things that they've marketed or sold as the reasons to get their product. But at the same time, I've also said, oh, but look at all these other things that, you know, this product or this brand does really, really well. The brand doesn't want to hear that. So I've gotten to the point of I'm just not going to say anything about it now because I feel like I cannot win. And I'm tired of fighting that battle of being like, listen, you guys, but I'm not being unfair. I feel like, you know, this feature or product or whatever, this thing about this thing is not great. And look at the other, you know, reviewers locally and internationally who are saying similar things as me, but you're not upset with them. Like, what's the issue here? So I've had that issue. And I've had one where I said from another brand, you know, that X product was maybe not that great and maybe not the product I would spend that money on. But look at all the other products in this brand's range that would give you like 98% or 95% of the same features for a lot less money. Have you considered getting those products? Only to have that brand phone me and say that, oh, you know, they feel that my review is unfair and what can they do to change my mind? And I was like, I'm not going to change this review because this has been my experience with it. And at the end of the day, you should either be addressing the problem or you should build a better product. That's it.
Look, at the end of the day, I also just to add on to what you said, as a brand, if you're giving someone a device to review or tech to review, in the place that you don't want to maybe spend with that brand, that is a wrong way to look at it. If you want to advertise with that brand, advertise with that brand, but don't give them a device to review to think, okay, cool, this will sort of make up for a space online for advertising, because that's, I feel, a very touchy space where you're bound to be unhappy. And it's you can't really build genuine relationships with journalists. And so brands out there also really need to, and PR in general, need to respect what the platforms they are punting towards and they are sharing devices and tech with.
Yeah, you know, I think on that point, the biggest thing for me is that at the end of the day, as brands, you know, as reviewers, as media, you know, PR, marketing, we're ultimately all in this together. So, you know, I feel like it serves everyone's best interests if we just find ways to work together. You know, it's just, it's interesting because if you look at, for example, I'm just going to outright say it, my relationship with Huawei, because I obviously was part of the Huawei P40 series launch in South Africa.
Which was awesome.
It
was awesome. It was an awesome launch. What was the hashtag? Brendan knows best. That was trending. I just want to put that out there.
But the reason I bring that up is because people were saying, you know, but oh, as a journalist, you know, you shouldn't be doing these kinds of things. I understand that viewpoint. But at the end of the day, it's a very obvious, you know, that I was paid by Huawei to be on that live stream, and this is what I had to say. You know, now the thing about all the things I said was there were no lies there. Like, let's be very honest, there were no lies there. you know, but that is me doing a paid sponsored role. But when I did, for example, a comparison between their P40 Pro and another flagship device, you know, there were many things where the Huawei device, in my opinion, won out. But there were also other things with the other brand's product where you could very clearly see, for example, in even in the images, where the other brand's product came out looking better. But yet I still had to hear from, you know, the other brand that, you're biased against us. And I'm like, guys, you clearly were winning on like almost half of these things here. You know, so how is that biased if it's, you know, that balanced out? You know, so I think people confuse those things and say, oh, well, you know, you did this one thing for Huawei where you were paid, so all your other things must be tainted. No, actually not. You know, I've done a podcast with a CTO and I'm actually doing another one in the next week or so. And I called him out, you know, just after the P40 series was announced, the global launch back in March. And I said, you know, look at the pricing of your products. Do you actually feel that this is value for money? Or look at the design of this. We've seen this before. You know, so what do you think about all these accusations that you guys have copied this design? Now, if I was biased towards that brand, I, you know, wouldn't be saying things like that. So I think it's very confusing in the public eye, you know, when we work with certain brands and then they think, oh, well, X, Y, and Z. Well, guys, a lot of the big, well-known YouTubers, a lot of the big, well-known sort of tech review crowd in South Africa have worked with these brands before, or have worked with other brands, and have been, you know, paid to say things on a stage or on a video. It happens.
And there's no problem in that. There's absolutely no problem in that. It just goes back to marking the content and having that clear-cut relationship with your audience. And as a consumer, I feel with anything, like if you go and buy a certain product, you know what you're getting. And I feel like if you're going to a launch of a phone or whatever it is, you know that at the launch, people are paid to talk well off that phone and that device. So
exactly.
You have to do your homework.
Yeah, I think it's confusing for many people when what's happening now is really sort of a hybridization of sort of just being like a journalist or tech media or tech review or whatever, and sort of moving into, I don't want to say full-on influencer, but there is a little bit of influence that we have in terms of, you know, people come to us for our opinions and our thoughts and our reviews. And they use those to make purchasing decisions. So I think there is a hybridization of what a journalist is these days to a degree. And I think that's where, you know, we all just need to be more aware, more transparent, and, you know, continue to do the best that we can.
I completely agree. I don't think as journalists are we completely innocent in this regard. You know, we do have products that we like and that we prefer. And so there's always going to be a humanity aspect to it, a bit of a bias here and there. But I think it's our responsibility to try as much as possible to give the consumer a very objective outlook.
Yeah. You know, so for everyone listening to all of these or, you know, going to the website or anything like that, you know, as both Nadim and I have said, you know, don't just base your opinions, especially when it's purchasing decisions. Don't base those on what we have to say. You know, by all means, listen to what we have to say, listen to our thoughts, read what we have to say, but go and check out other reviews as well. You know, get balanced opinions from multiple people before putting down money on something. But yeah, I think we're gonna leave that one there because I think we could go on for quite a while.
Yeah, we
could. Let's delve into some of the big tech news this week.
All right.
Okay, so actually, before we started recording, you mentioned to me that you were using Samsung Galaxy Buds. Now, I don't know if those are Galaxy Buds or Buds Plus. But
the Buds Plus.
Oh, there we go. It's actually, I think that's where we're going to jump in because, as we know, the 5th of August is when Samsung is doing their Galaxy Unpacked event. And they do two Galaxy Unpacked events a year. Obviously, the first half is for... you know, like the S series, so like S10, S20 that we saw earlier this year. And then the latter half of the year, we see the move towards the Galaxy Note. So that's obviously what's happening on the 5th of August. And alongside that, there's also been a lot of talk about these new Galaxy Buds, which we now believe are going to be called Galaxy Buds Live. That's according to numerous, you know, online articles and a leak from EV Leaks, Evan Blass. And I want to say I've spoken to you before, Nadim, about this, but I'm not sure. I know I've mentioned these on this podcast before, but these Galaxy Buds Live have a very interesting design. They look like beans, as in like literal beans that you would eat. They look like beans that you would put in your ears and your music comes out of them. And I looked at them and I was like, wait, what? I'm confused. Have you actually seen the images of these things?
I have seen them. I mean, I do love the colors. The colors are great, right? But I'm just trying to get the mechanics a bit wrapped around my head. It's, you know, also because the Galaxy Buds Plus, they're so small. Are these going to be a bit bigger? You know, how's it going to fit? How's it going to feel? They are very futuristic. It's almost like the Tesla of Galaxy Buds. What do you think, Brendan?
So for anyone who's listening, if you haven't seen this, you can hop over to, you know, theverge.com. I think Android Authority probably also has something. Basically, every big tech site. They're interesting. Like I say, they literally look like a bean, like a kidney bean kind of shape. It's a cannellini bean, I suppose. I don't know. The colors are really cool because it comes, according to this leak, it's going to be in a... what's this, like a coppery goldish kind of color, which is apparently what the Note 20 series is going to be available in. And, you know, there's no sort of like silicone ear tips like there is on the Galaxy Buds or Galaxy Buds Plus. So essentially these just sort of sit in your ear and it's got two sensors or two, I don't know what they are, and then a speaker. I like the colors. The design I find very weird. Because as you say, are they going to be bigger? How much are they going to stick out of your ear? But my bigger question is, how are they going to stay in your ear?
Exactly. I mean, when we look at the FreeBuds, the Huawei FreeBuds, they also don't have the latest ones. They don't have the silicon buds. And so I don't know if it's going to play off that or the Apple Bud, you know, the... What's Apple's one called? Apple Buds.
The AirPods.
AirPods. Honestly, I'm just going blank today. But, you know, the AirPods also. So maybe it's just so ergonomically fit. But I'm quite excited just to try them on and go for a run and that kind of thing. I think that's what I love with the Buds Plus. It's just that the fact that you can go on the treadmill with them. You can do a high-intensity workout with it. Or you can just chill. And they're very comfortable and they sit really nicely. I also don't like the fact that this looks like it will take up most of your ear space. And I don't know how stylish that is. I don't know how... that sort of makes a statement, because with the earbuds, that's got such heavy branding behind it. You know, that's just seeing it from afar, you can see, okay, cool, those are earbuds, and that's, you know, there's a certain style and aura about them. So it'll be exciting to test them out. Hopefully we get sent these ones.
I mean, we shall see, you know, we'll see what happens on August the 5th. But yeah, I don't know if these are going to sort of follow in that very sort of iconic design from AirPods, because these have been very divisive since these leaks have appeared. The fact that it doesn't have silicone, I don't know. It bothers me a little bit, but not as much as I think it's bothering other people. You know, I've got AirPods 2. I don't have the AirPods Pro, but I've got AirPods 2. I've got, you know, Huawei FreeBuds, got Galaxy Buds, Galaxy Buds Plus. You know, I've used the Jabra Elite 75T Active. You know, I've used lots of different in-ear ones. And I tend to prefer the ones with the silicone just because, you know, more snug seal.
Me as well. I much prefer silicone. I don't know. I just... They're also more comfortable. The plastic gets a bit awkward in the ear.
Yeah, especially if you've been working out for a while, which, you know, Nadine, at Men's Health, you're probably doing like whole day every day.
You know what? Lockdown has really been tough for all of us. That's what I'm saying.
Listen, yeah, maybe you need these Galaxy Buds Live to make your life a little bit more...
Honestly, Samsung Mobile SA, I hope you guys are listening. We want to review these.
Yeah, because these, 9to5 Google says that they have a vent-like speaker, and they apparently are also going to have active noise cancellation. So, you know, that's something we haven't seen on the Galaxy Buds or Buds Plus. So, design aside, I'm hoping that, you know, Samsung's used the power of AKG to build some really amazing audio quality into this. I'm very curious to see you know, what these are actually like, how these stay in your ear, whether these are going to be available in all the regions, and essentially just how accurate this sort of leak has been. But staying on the topic of Samsung and obviously Unpacked, as we said, Unpacked is happening on the 5th of August. And, you know, as we always see before these devices launch, there's been a lot of leaks. And we essentially know a lot of what we're expecting to see with the Galaxy Note 20 series. The big question, obviously, is will there be an Ultra or will there not be an Ultra? We seem to keep waffling between yes and no on that one. And we're looking to see probably another foldable. You know, so that's most likely going to be the Galaxy Fold 2. But as The Verge says, or specifically as Dieter Bahn from The Verge says, Samsung needs a splashy product for its splashy product launch, which it does. Because if we know this much about your upcoming products, you know, almost a good month ahead of your product launch, then where's the hype and excitement going to come from your launch? So my question then is, do they possibly have something up their sleeves? And they're sort of happy to, you know, let all these leaks happen, because as we've seen another tech journalist slash tech leaker, Roland Quandt on Twitter, he is from a German publication, you know, he publicly said that, listen here, with all the things that he leaks and with, you know, many of the other leaks that appear online, it's actually the companies behind the actual product who's sort of giving this information to them, and essentially is like, listen here, make it seem like you got this from an anonymous source, because, you know, leaks build hype. So maybe, and I'm not saying that they're doing this, but maybe what's happening is these leaks are going out, Samsung's like, okay, cool, let them be distracted by that, and we've got some super amazing product coming up that no one thought, you know, we would do or would be happening. But how do you feel? Do you feel like, you know, Samsung's going to be okay with just the, you know, the Buds Live, the Fold 2 and the Note 20 series? Or do you think that they need something to sort of bring focus and attention back to what Samsung is actually able to do in the mobile space?
I think, you know what, if you look at the Galaxy Z Flip and, you know, how loud that launch was and how exciting it was, I think if they do bring a Fold 2, I think it'll still get lots of traction. Whether or not it'll be loud enough, I'm not sure. I actually personally am getting a bit tired with all the leaks and the way they're sort of doing things, or the way people are rather getting hold of the photos. And I almost feel like I know everything about the Note 20. I know, you know, you feel like, what's the use even watching these things? Oh, we just have to sort of confirm what's been rumored. So personally, I feel like the best way to hype something up is radio silence. And then, you know, release the date and then release your tech. And I think a brand that does that very well is Apple. Apple, there's very little hype beforehand, and they leave it all up to the consumer. And what I also like about Apple is that they mainly compare them, their devices and their products to themselves. They don't really bring other brands into it. So I love their strategy. I think it's still a winner. But it'll be interesting to see. I think the glittier, the better for Samsung, and the bolder and the more innovative. So the Galaxy Z Fold 2, I'm really excited to check that out.
Yeah, I mean, I like the fact that you refer to it as the Galaxy Z Fold 2, because that's another interesting that they've done.
Yeah.
Back at the S20 event earlier this year, we obviously were at the local South African one, which happened at exactly the same time as the global one. And we spoke to Justin Hume, who is the head of integrated mobility at Samsung Mobile South Africa, which essentially means he's basically just the head of Samsung Mobile South Africa. And I asked the question when they, you know, after they unveiled the Galaxy Z Flip, and I said, Justin, why did you call it the Galaxy Z Flip? Why not just the Galaxy Flip like you did with Galaxy Fold? It's like, is there a range coming, you know, that essentially the Galaxy Z Flip is the first, you know, device in that range? And he said to me point blank, yes. I mean, he first walked away. He was like, Brendan, you would be the only person to ask the question, and you'd be the only person to figure that out. And I was like, I mean, yeah. But, you know, he confirmed that, yes, the Galaxy Z Flip was the first in a new range from Samsung. And now, if you go to Samsung's website, so samsung.com or samsungmobile.com, or just, yeah, samsung.com, go look at their mobile division. And obviously, they break it down into different product ranges. If you look at the Galaxy Z range, you will see that the Z Flip is there, but the Galaxy's Fold has also been moved there as part of the Z range, you know, which confirms what I think The Verge was saying in one of the articles, that the Z series is going to be Samsung's foldable series. So we're going to see a range of different foldable style devices in that. And that's why when you say Galaxy Z Fold 2, I was like, you know, that's probably what they're going to call it. It is a bit of a mouthful, but, you know, is the Z Fold 2 going to be enough to still hold the hype? Because I think the problem that Samsung has set up for itself is this. You know, when you get to the top, the question is, where do you go from there? And they've become so good at what they do that for them to constantly be at the top and be seen as, you know, the leader that they are, they have got to push innovation more than anybody else. And when they've done so much already to set standards and benchmarks, you know, how much more can they afford to keep pushing? Because this year, you know, their big bet was the new camera sensor in the S20 Ultra.
Oh, yes.
And
oh, gosh.
Let's be honest. It wasn't the worst thing I've ever used. It wasn't the best I've ever used. And, you know, again, I'm not the only one who said this. I believe an exact quote from The Verge is fine at best and problematic at worst. You know, and they obviously they went big on the 100 times space zoom. And now, according to reports, the Note 20, which we all know that Notes are essentially just a slightly souped up version of an S series device with a stylus. But apparently with the Note 20, they're going to keep the 108 megapixel sensor, but they're going to drop the 100 times space zoom. Now, that's interesting because, let's be honest, we know that the 100 times space zoom was basically just, you know, hey, look at my phone, I can do this thing, even though you can't really see the picture. But how are they going to sort of resolve that issue with the 108 megapixel camera? And I'm very curious to see what they're going to do because I love a Note. My favorite Samsung mobile device every year has always been the Note more than the S20 or the S series. You know, now with what's happening with foldables. But is that going to be enough? 108 megapixel sensor and 5G, which is obviously going to have. To me, I don't think so. But then the question is, okay, if you've got that for the Note, you've got a slightly upgraded version of the Galaxy Fold, so the Galaxy Z Fold 2, you know, what is going to be the wow thing? What is going to make everybody sit there and go, holy damn, this is okay. This is the one, Samsung. You know, like we've done before when the original Fold was released or when the Note 9 came out, you know, or any of these iconic products that Samsung has released before. What are they going to do? What do you want to see? What are you hoping to see? In an ideal world, what would you like to see?
What I'm hoping to see is more the design than anything and how fluid the device is, how, you know, I'm so happy they did away with the space zoom, or I'm hoping they did away with the space zoom, because I feel like it was completely useless to a large extent. It was cool, but it also drew attention away from the 10 times zoom that was really good on the Samsung. And I think right up to 50 times zoom, it was pretty decent. And then it got really sort of blurry and grainy. And I feel it just didn't do much. I don't think you'd ever take a photo with that zoom. That's more you'd use that zoom just to spy on people if you're in lockdown. So I'm hoping just to see a very well-rounded product, you know, something that for once I feel really bad saying for once. I think I'm just referring to the Ultra. But for a launch to happen by Samsung where all the hype is real and there's a lot of efficacy to the product, I feel like they have been lacking in that area with the S20 series, especially with regards to the price and especially on the Ultra. So I'd like to see a very well-rounded product because I think they just need to do their product well. They're at the space now where they're on such a high level, as you said, and they're so innovative. So all they need to do now is to make sure their products are very well-rounded and whatever they say and whatever they market is true.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that Samsung has ever sort of not been truthful about things. But I think they've done it in a very marketing way where they've highlighted certain things that maybe don't work as well as, you know, you'd want them to. But in all fairness, show me a brand that hasn't done that.
Oh, that's true. I think with Samsung, we do tend to be very nitpicky and Because they're the best. I mean, when you're the best, people are going to be at your throat. And I think you, as a brand, they have to sort of expect that. I mean, I love Samsung. My favorite phone is the Note. And I mean, I love the S20 Ultra as well. Don't get me wrong. But yeah, I think they are going to get lots of criticism if they don't sort of live up to the expectation.
Yeah, and I think living up to the expectation is a lot. You know, I sort of compare it to when a number one selling, you know, artist or musician releases, you know, they release their first album and everyone's like, oh my, this is amazing. It's the best thing I've ever heard. And then it comes time for that artist to, you know, drop the second album. And then people are like, but is it going to be as good as the first one? And the expectation is, you know, X, Y, and Z. And then the artist, you know, unfortunately, a lot of them have fallen into the trap of, I've got to live up to the hype of my first one. And they try to recreate it and they don't quite succeed. And then people are like, I don't like this. Or they try something different because it's what feels right to them. And then people are like, but I wish you did something more like the first one. I feel like Samsung's in that position where, you know, even though they can do some of the best hardware and arguably some of the best software, you know, on both sides to a degree, I feel like they're now victims of their own success. Where if you're going to do something, this is my personal opinion, I would rather them not do like a 100 times space zoom. I understand that they would have done it just to show this is what we can do. And I think from that perspective, it's important to push technology forward. But I don't think it should have been, you know, the biggest marketing hook for that product. But I think what I would like them, what I'd like to see, or what would make me happy is if they had to pull a little bit of an Apple, actually, where they sit and they just start fine-tuning even more some of what they're already able to offer. Like S20 Ultra, had a, 5,000 milliamp hour battery? That's fantastic. But that 5,000 milliamp hour battery needed a bit of software tweaking to make it deliver, you know, the kind of battery life you'd expect from 5,000 milliamp hour from a 5,000 milliamp hour battery. And it didn't. So I'd like them to do a little bit more tweaking on that. You know, obviously they need to do something about the 108 megapixel cameras, ISP, the image software processing. You know, so it's little things. And I just wanted to tighten that up because we've seen them do it. We know that they've got the best displays on the market. They've got, you know, class-leading and industry-leading design. They own AKG, so when it comes to audio, they can play their game really well when they want to. You know, it's all of these little things that I just want them to fine-tune. I don't want them to do that thing where you throw in everything but the kitchen sink just for the sake of, like, marketing hooks and gimmicks. Do what you do, Samsung. Double down on that and do it well. Because if they do that, you know, they can just sit there smiling, be happy all the time, and know that everyone at the end of the day is still trying to catch up to them. But they've gotten to such a far degree, you know, that catching up to them is going to take a long time. Like, fix those little things, and I'll be a happy man.
But just to drive that sentiment home, I think I'm such a huge Samsung fan. I just want to put that out there. I think, you know, if you love tech, you do love Samsung. You love this kind of products they produce. But I think that's even more so that we're going to be extra critical. And the criticism does come from a good place, you know, as well.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited to see what they have. I think it's going to be an awesome, awesome experience. And yeah, let's see what they have to show for it.
Yeah. Listen, yeah, August the 5th is going to be a very, very interesting day for all of us, I think. But yeah, I'm very curious to see what they're going to do. I hope that we're going to see something completely unexpected. But, you know, I think also the other thing that's going to be important for people is the pricing. So let's see if the rumors of a lower price is going to, if those are going to be true or not. But talking about a company that actually does really great sort of products and design, and is actually also very good at marketing, specifically because of their CEO, Elon Musk and Tesla.
Oh, yes.
That man and Twitter. Sometimes I'm just like, please take the internet away from me. please. But he made a very interesting claim this year, yet again. I mean, this year, this past week on Twitter, where he was like, I feel like the way he would have said it if he was in high school was like, bruh, listen here. Like, you know, he's like, I'm the cool guy and I know it. Please never let me say that again because that's just embarrassing. But he was like, listen here, he believes that Tesla will have basic autonomous level 5 on their cars by the end of this year. And the simplest way to explain autonomous level 5, Nadim, I don't know if you might be able to explain it a little bit better than I do. But essentially, yeah, sorry, it's complete autonomous driving, you know, where the car is basically going to drive itself, you know, from start to finish, if I'm correct, but I could be wrong here.
No, that's exactly what it is. And at the moment, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Tesla have an autonomous level 2, where it does have a good fair share of autonomy, but the driver has to be ready and alert at all times. Where level 5 is full autonomy, where you're going to see very much like a chauffeur-driven experience, which is claimed to be. And that's why, with Musk saying this, it is super exciting, but it puts a lot of pressure on him and more pressure on Tesla than Musk's tweets. And yeah, it's going to be exciting to see how far they get and whether they're willing to sell this tech, you know, to other companies. I don't know if you saw recently, Brendan, but Tesla has surpassed Toyota in terms of their share and their company worth. You know, Tesla, if I'm not mistaken, is around $1,100 per share, and which gives them like $206 billion worth. And Toyota is worth around $200 billion. So they just surpassed Toyota, and that's massive. I think that's a massive benchmark for Musk. But saying that, what sort of extent is that due to actual production and quality of the vehicle compared to just overall hype in general with regards to Tesla and innovation? And I think we're very much in a space and a bubble now where it's all about the hype. It's all about what's said online. It's all about the futuristic tech behind it. Whereas, you know, Toyota's got this history of this really ultra-performing Japanese powerhouse that's cemented in brick and mortar and reliability that produces way more than Tesla. So it's going to be interesting to see where Tesla hits. Another thing is, I don't know if you guys saw that recently when Musk tweeted about Tesla and he went on that whole rampage of tweets, Tesla lost $14 billion. So what Musk says is very related to Tesla, and it's if he can stay true to his word, it's going to do wonders for the company, I feel.
The point that you made about how much Musk's social media presence, or shall we say celebrity influence, has on the company is a very valuable and important point, because, you know, we've obviously reached the stage where you've got, shall we call them celebrity CEOs? You know, Steve Jobs was one, Tim Cook is one to a degree, Jeff Bezos from Amazon is. Satya, maybe not as much as Bill Gates was when he was in charge of Microsoft, but, you know, even he has, you know, that sort of power to a degree. You know, I think that is very important what you mentioned about that. And I think if he, as you say, can live up to his tweet of autonomous level 5 before the end of the year, that's a huge deal. But realistically, I don't know how that's possible, because, you know, Tesla has the autopilot. They've got something they call full self-driving option that's appeared on a couple of the more expensive Teslas. But, you know, that's not even full self-driving. You know, the closest they have is autopilot to a degree. And again, as you say, there's still got to be some sort of drive involvement. Now, from a tech perspective, are we there yet? Because, you know, for autonomous level 5, because it requires a level of data connection that I don't think we have in most countries around the world. Maybe select Asian countries like, South Korea. So maybe somewhere like Seoul or something like that, or Japan. But I don't think we have the data capabilities. You know, that's obviously where 5G becomes very important. You know, because you need the lower latency for AI, which is going to be piloting this thing, to be able to make faster decisions and react faster. But at the same time, you know, the legalities of all of this, you know, legal sort of statutes around the world haven't been able to adapt to full self-driving cars yet, because we don't know what that means. And the sort of most popular thing around that is people say, if a self-driving car was involved in an accident, who is responsible? Is it the manufacturer of the car? Is it the passenger slash driver who was in the car, even if they weren't driving? You know, is it the software company behind the software? Like, where does the responsibility lie? And just that legal question alone tells you how far away we are from the possibility of autonomous level 5. Where is this man getting the tech from? Because as you mentioned at the beginning of this chat, Teslas have arguably just had autonomous level 2, maybe pushing level 3.
Yes.
You know, but to go from that to 5 is a massive jump. So do you think, just, you know, I'm not saying that you are an expert in self-driving cars. You obviously done more motoring journalism than I have. But do you honestly, in your personal opinion, think that that's something that's possible to make that much of a jump in such a short amount of time?
Look, we're in a space at the moment where we are just trying to even shift towards electric vehicles. So let's start there. I think we need to manage our expectations. You know, you have amazing electric vehicles that are out there at the moment, like the I-Pace, for one. And I think that space is going to continue to grow. But I think in terms of autonomous driving, I feel, especially in South Africa, the South African perspective, I feel it's very much a long stretch. And it's going to be interesting to see where Musk takes Tesla and how Tesla developed the tech. But honestly, personally, Brendan, I don't see it happening even 10 years from now. I would not see it. I think by 2030, we will not have, in South Africa, we will not have autonomous vehicles, especially in a level 5 sense. But I hope Tesla can prove me wrong.
Yeah, I think South Africa is going to need the infrastructure upgrade before, you know, we can even look at autonomous level 5. But again, as I said, you know, that's obviously where, not just in South Africa, but around the world, that's where 5G becomes so important. You know, that discussion we've had so many times on this platform, you know, we've seen online from other people about the importance of 5G. This is just one example of where 5G becomes a huge deal. But yeah, I honestly don't know if this is more just like a hype thing, pay attention to Tesla, or whether he can actually deliver some basic form of autonomous, like full autonomous level 5 driving. I would love it if it happened. I really, really would, because I think, you know, I had a discussion with Papi Mabele last week about, you know, BMW, about Mercedes. Mercedes obviously having ended its car subscription service. BMW now charging essentially microtransactions. You know, the very concept of what we call driving and cars has changed and is continuing to evolve. And when we get full autonomous, you know, cars, what does that mean for, you know, our concept of what a car is? And what does that mean for what our concept of what a driver and a passenger is? You know, so I think there's also a lot of implications from a pure sort of cultural aspect as well, you know, before we even look at the technical aspects of this. So I think it's a big claim. I think it's something that people want to hear. Whether it's actually true, I don't know. I think if anyone can pull it off, though, Musk is the man to do it. Because, you know, he's got that mix of crazy genius. I don't know what else to call it. that could actually make it happen.
Yeah, I think if anyone does it, it's going to be he's a risk taker.
Just to finish off, I think a product that I maybe wish he had been involved with, because maybe it would have fared better than it actually has. Oh, yeah. No, listen, yeah. He is definitely a risk taker. But a brand that would have benefited from that is the one I actually want to close off with this podcast about, is Quibi. I don't know if you've ever actually checked out Quibi, Nadim. It is it's a short form video content platform. Quibi, Q-I-B-I, the name came from Quick Bites. You know, so it was meant to be short bursts of content, professionally made shows where no episode was longer than 10 minutes. And it was meant to be, you know, watch on your phone while you're standing in the line to, I don't know, get on a plane or order a cup of coffee. And obviously this was all done before, you know, COVID and before the lockdowns and quarantines we've had around the world. And that's obviously massively affected this product and, you know, its use cases and all of those things. And a lot of reports are saying that after the free trial that everyone was offered when Quibi came out, and I had that, Quibi lost anywhere up to 90/92% of the audience. So essentially only 8% of people remain behind for one of the paid tiers to actually watch this content. And one of the big sort of call outs was, why was there not even the option to cast to a TV? Now, obviously, you know, when this product was conceived, the idea was never to watch on TV, it was to watch on the go. But, you know, with COVID, one would have hoped that, listen, yeah, they would have adapted a little bit faster. And they, I still believe, adapted fairly quickly. But a lot of people saying, listen, yeah, they didn't do enough, fast enough to make people happy. What do you think about the fact that this thing didn't survive the way, you know, the big names behind it had hoped that it would? And have you ever actually checked out Quibi? Have you actually used it? What are your thoughts
about
it?
So, Brendan, you told me about Quibi months ago, and I activated it, and I just didn't get the chance to use it because, honestly, I've been home. I was in Johannesburg for the first half of the lockdown and then had to make a plan to get back to my place in Cape Town. But I've never been able to sort of go for coffee at Seattle and, you know, in my lunch break now, you know, watch a bit of Quibi, a 7-minute type show. And so I kept saying, listen, I've signed up, I've subscribed, now I'm paying for it. You know, maybe I should just use it and check it out. I felt like it didn't organically come to me. And I think, unfortunately, that is probably the case of most consumers, just because of the lockdown situation. I think it's a genius idea on paper and what I've seen. I mean, talking from someone that hasn't experienced it, but I've got the app, I know how it looks and how it feels. I think they will have to wait to see when lockdown eases and to see people, you know, commute again. I think it will rise. I think it's a good idea. And I think the quality of the content is really good. But I haven't watched it enough to get into any type of series yet. But hopefully, you know, I can. Hopefully there's chance for that, you know, going forward.
I mean, there were a couple of shows in there, I'm not going to lie, that I really, really did like. And as I've said, you know, there's some big names involved with, you know, these shows on Quibi. And I think the concept, as you said, you know, the concept is interesting. We've moved into a world where people are consuming media differently. Different formats work. You know, YouTube is pushing for longer form content, although they're now apparently going to be pushing mid-roll ads if your video is, I think, 8 minutes or longer, which I think is going to upset a lot of people. But, you know, the fact that YouTube is pushing for longer, we've also seen the rise of TikTok where it's, you know, maximum 1 minute videos. And I think Instagram's got its own version of, well, essentially its own version of TikTok, which they push into India now that, you know, TikTok's not available there. We've seen different mixes of mediums, but we've definitely seen a rise of more short form content. So I think that concept of professionally made short form content, there's definitely something there. But I don't think it's just the timing of the launch of this product that was a big contributor towards its, shall we say, demise, even though they're not dead yet. And, you know, if their PR ever listened to this, they'll probably argue that they're nowhere close to dead. But I think it's interesting where you see things like, you know, Apple TV Plus launched not too long before that. We're not hearing a lot from it at the moment. But again, you know, that's also almost like a normal Apple thing. You know, we saw Disney Plus launch. We've seen so many other services launch since Quibi or around the time of Quibi who've had arguably better retention rates. Now, is that because they're offering a better quality product? Is that because they're meeting the needs of people now? Is that because they've offered you more options in terms of how you can consume that content? Or is it a mixture of some of all of those things? Or is the idea of professionally made shorter form content just a stupid idea and I'm just in a minority that's like, wait, there's something here?
I definitely don't think it's a stupid idea at all. I think a way forward for Quibi, they should explore the options in terms of partnership. If you look at Apple and Apple TV and all the subscriptions Apple has, you almost have to buy one device and you pay off that device, but they know that as a company, they're still going to have a certain amount of income for the next few years based on their subscription model. So I feel like there is so many new smartphones out there. Quibi should then look at partnering with these smartphones and just, they need people just to experience it. I think they need to get people onto the platform. And I think as a standalone, if they don't have these partnerships, it's going to be very hard for them to be on that level as your Disney, your Apple, your Netflix, and so on. So that's just my sort of opinion. I don't know if they'd agree.
I didn't actually think about that, and I like the fact that you just mentioned this. If they maybe had to partner with a smartphone brand and maybe have it as a, pre-installed app slash service on a new device, maybe that could help them because, as you say, maybe they just need to get more eyeballs watching, and maybe partnering with a brand is one option that they could do. Maybe introducing a free tier where, yeah, they might be ads, but maybe having a free tier where there's ads or, only say 50% or 60% of the content's available in terms of the shows, not in terms of episodes of a show, because that would drive me mad. Maybe that, something to entice people and say, listen, yeah, there is value in this. And making it available on screens larger than just a smartphone. So, the bigger call was, why do we not have a casting option? They built the casting option, integrated into the app, and now you can essentially cast it to your TV. But I don't believe that there's an iPad app, and I'm thinking, okay, wouldn't an iPad app just help you out a lot? Because aren't people using their tablets more for media consumption? So I'd love for the big names at the top. There's Jeffrey Katzenberg, who's the co-founder, and Meg Whitman, who's the CEO, and those are big names in entertainment and tech. I'd love for them to sit down and maybe just sort of relook at where Quibi fits in, because I think that there is potential value, but I think they also need to look at the platforms or the screen sizes that you can watch it on. And I don't know. I feel like there's something there. I just feel like they have become victims of their own sort of single-minded focus on this is what it needs to be, and this is the only thing that it needs to be. I think during the time that the world is going through now, as any brand, even a new brand, you need to be able to adapt and flex and find different ways of using your business model to bring people something that they want and need. And I don't think that Quibi has been flexible enough, whether that's because of, a single-minded focus of this is who we are and this is what we're going to stay true to, or whether it's because of technical limitations. But I don't think that Quibi has been flexible enough, fast enough, to get people to stay on board. Because the other problem that they have is, how do you persuade people to sign up for yet another streaming subscription service when you've got other ones offering, full hour-long episodes of things and movies and things that cost maybe not much more, so waste a value proposition for a consumer.
And if I wanted a quick video, and not to say, I mean, I love the TV concept, but Facebook's got such a good system. It's got such a good video system. If you just want a quick 5-minute video or whatever, that's where I would go to Facebook for, and that's where I've been going. So they really need to think out the box here. And I mean, I want to see them thrive. I want to see them successful. So I think they're going to be. I just think it's a matter of time and a matter of how to.
Yeah, I think the how-to is going to be important, and I think at the end of the day, getting people to understand short-form content, professionally made short-form content, while it might make sense to some of us, I think to a larger degree, it doesn't make sense to a lot of people because there's massive budgets attached to it. And essentially, the question is, why am I spending? Why is a brand spending this much to produce a show that's, essentially under 10 minutes an episode? And let's say there's only six episodes, that's a total of an hour. But they're still spending massive budgets. And, while something like TikTok is easy to understand because the concept behind TikTok is obviously you're just doing it on the fly at home yourself, you're not spending a lot of money on these things. I think the idea of professionally made short form content is still just, maybe it's an idea that needs a bit more time before people get used to it. But I would love to see Quibi find a way to survive. But I think they need to have a serious sit down and figure out how to get people to understand it and how to address the needs and the wants of people. And I think if they can do that, with people like Katzenberg and Whitman behind it, there's a lot of potential for them to be able to do that. It's now just using that know-how that they have to adapt what they do to fit the current climate.
Great. No, definitely. Definitely. I think that's so well said. I hope they listen to this one. I hope they listen to it. I think it'll be cool if they get in touch. But yeah, man, do you want to touch on anything else?
No, I think we're going to leave it there because otherwise, you know, we'll be here for forever.
I don't even know how long. Oh, wow. It's already past an hour. Okay. We can talk
but
offline.
Before we go, though, where can the people find you online, Nadeem?
They can find me at Nadeem Nyker, NadeemNyker, on Instagram. And you can check out Men's Health site. That's mh.co.za. And their Instagram is at Men's Health ZA. What? MENSHEALTHZA. Yeah, it's been one hell of a podcast. But you take care. And thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining. And then for everyone else listening, you can obviously find Reframed on anchor.fm/ReframedTech, or you can search for Reframed Tech on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Overcast, Pocket Casts, Radio Public, Breaker. Just, you know, look out for us. There's quite a few interesting little conversations we've had in the past couple of weeks. You can also find Tech Reframed on the social media platforms, so Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. And then stay tuned because this week we're actually going to be doing something a little bit different. We're going to be chatting to Acer Africa, and we're going to be doing a little bit of a hands-on via video of the new products, or at least some of the new products that they unveiled at their global press conference, their GPC, about 2 weeks ago. And we've got some other interesting things coming up in the next few weeks. So you're definitely going to want to stay tuned for all of that. But that is us. We're out. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure to subscribe. We've got 2 episodes dropping every week. And we'll catch you on the next podcast. And that's it. Thank you so much for joining us on another episode of the Reframe Podcast. If you'd like to check out more content like this, or catch up on a weekly tech wrap-up, you can find us on anchor.fm/ReframeTech, or simply search for Reframe Tech on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and many other platforms. You can also head over to the website, reframe.co, or find us on social media at TechReframed.